This is Deborah Beck, professor of ancient Greek literature in the Department of Classics at the University of Texas at Austin. My students and I are excited to welcome you to our podcast, Musings in Greek Literature.
Welcome to Musings from Greek 365, a podcast series of 8 episodes on Homer's Iliad, created by the students in an advanced undergraduate course at the University of Texas at Austin. I'm Claudia Cockrell, a student in the class, and this is episode 4, The Funeral Rites of Patroclus. In the previous episode, my classmate Sam discussed the end of book 22, which concludes with Andromache mourning the loss of her husband Hector. In this episode, we'll be looking at the opening of book 23, where the action shifts away from Troy and back to the Greek camp. The opening of this book serves as a handy bridge away from violence and towards resolution. Today we will be focusing on lines 1 to 79. To give a summary of these lines, we see Achilles announcing to his Myrmidons that with Hector dead, the time for Patroclus' funeral has finally come. The men form a procession around the body, and Achilles gives an address to Patroclus. Achilles then visits Agamemnon in his hut, still covered in gore from the battle, which he refuses to wash off his body until Patroclus has been buried the following morning. Everyone then disperses to bed, and Achilles is visited in his sleep by the shade of Patroclus. We're going to look at 3 main things today. Firstly, how ring compositions and echoes from earlier books provide closure for the fate of Patroclus. Secondly, how pathos manifests itself in contradictory ways due to the contrast in the treatment of Hector and Patroclus' bodies. And finally, we're going to examine Homer's presentation of Hades in this passage, and how Achilles and Patroclus' final interaction sheds valuable light on their relationship. Stay with us. If you're following with the text, we're going to start from line 12. In this section, we see the Greeks wailing in unison and driving their chariots 3 times around the body of Patroclus. Achilles then lays his hands on Patroclus' chest and says that he has fulfilled his promise to murder Hector and defile his body. In these lines, there are many significant echoes from events just past. Only 12 lines earlier, the book opened with a description of the Trojans wailing throughout the city. Hos hoimen stenachonto katatolin. Now it is the Greeks who are wailing. Hoi domochan aioleas. However, while the Greeks have a body to mourn over, the Trojans don't, as Hector's corpse has been dragged back to the camp by Achilles. This is a significant difference, which we will explore in more detail later on. Take a look at line 13. Hoi de trisperi necron utricas elasan hippus murumenoi. Where in book 22, Achilles pursued Hector 3 times around the walls of Troy, it is now the Greeks driving their horses 3 times around the body of Patroclus. This parallel further emphasizes the shift away from Hector and on to Patroclus. All the while, the Greeks are crying. In fact, they're absolutely sobbing. Homer says that both their armor and the sands are flooded with tears. The hyperbole here evokes pathos, as the image of their tears rolling down their shining armor and onto the sand suggests the vulnerability that lies hidden beneath their mighty metal-clad exteriors. Then, in line 18, Achilles lays his man-slaying hands on the breast of his companion. Cheras epandrophunos themenos stethesin athairo. This line is an exact replica of book 18, line 317, when Achilles is first brought to the body of Patroclus. There, he lays his hands on Patroclus' chest and promises that he won't bury him until he returns from the war with Hector's corpse. Now, Achilles may state that he has fulfilled his promise. This creates a neat ring composition and ties up the fate of Patroclus, which has previously been left open for the last 4 books. Achilles' address to Patroclus has the additional effect of starkly emphasizing that Hector's fate still lies open, and as it currently stands, he is not in the most favorable position. Achilles goes on to say that he has dragged Hector here to feed him raw to the dogs, who will tear him into pieces. There's something so visceral and dehumanizing here about the fact that Achilles uses the word oma, raw, as if Hector is nothing more than a piece of meat. Throughout the Iliad, various characters voice not their fear of dying, but the fear that once they have died, their body will be left out as scraps for the birds and dogs to consume. So this image is crucial, as it marks the contrasting scenarios in which the Trojans and the Greeks are mourning. This begs the question of whether we should pity one or both of the men. Take a look at line 24, after Achilles has just finished his speech. The Greek reads, Hera kai hektora diona ekeia medeto erga. So he spoke and devised shameful deeds for brilliant Hector. This line is another replica, this time from only moments earlier, in line 395 of book 22, just before Achilles ties Hector to his chariot to bring back to the Achaean camp. Here, the poet places Dion and Aeacia right next to each other, and this juxtaposition emphasizes that it is Hector who was brilliant, divine, godlike, while Achilles is the unseemly shameful one. This line could be seen as the narrator imparting his opinion that Achilles is behaving in an improper manner, and the repetition of the line emphasizes how unwavering Achilles has been in his resolve to maim Hector's corpse. This manifests itself further in the following line, where Achilles flips Hector's body so it is lying face down in the dust beside the bier of Patroclus. This is a deliberate flouting of funeral customs, where very clear-cut ideas were held. A body should be laid on its back before funeral, and a belief was held that if the body was not given proper burial rites, then the person's soul would not be able to cross the Styx and pass through the underworld. Thus, the insult to injury here is twofold, and the image of Patroclus lying on a bier next to Hector face down on the ground reinforces the horrifying treatment Hector's body is receiving. The big question here is whether or not Achilles is justified in maiming Hector's corpse in this way. Although his actions are shocking, it must be remembered that Hector wanted to do similar things to Patroclus' body, and Achilles knows this. In book 18, line 190, Iris tells Achilles that Hector means to impale Patroclus' head on a stake and fix it atop the walls of Troy. On top of this, leaving a body out for the birds and dogs is a common threat which many characters employ. Agamemnon even threatens his own men with this fate in book 2, wishing any man who shirks his duties to be consumed by dogs and vultures. Thus, Achilles' treatment of Hector's body is a legitimate reaction for an enemy, although the visceral terms in which it is described makes both the audience and soon even the gods feel uncomfortable. We're going to skip forward a bit, past the litany of animals which Achilles sacrifices at the foot of Patroclus' bier, past Achilles visiting Agamemnon's hut and reluctantly joining the feast, to nightfall. While all the other men drift off to sleep, Achilles lies on the shore, groaning in sorrow until sleep finally overcomes him. In the passage that follows, we are given a rare and vital insight into the Homeric perception of the mechanisms of the underworld. No sooner has sleep relieved the grief in Achilles' heart than the spirit of Patroclus appears above his head. His face, voice, and clothes are just the same as when he was living. And while we may expect him to offer Achilles some soothing words, he instead opens his speech with a rebuke, saying this, Eudeus, autarameo le las menos e pleu Achilleu. Umen meu sontos, Achilles, alathanontos. You are asleep, and you have forgotten me, Achilles. You never neglected me when I was alive, but now in death. Of course, the reader knows that this couldn't be further from the truth. For the past 5 books, Achilles has done nothing but think of Patroclus. Achilles' wailing has been incessant, and his mother Thetis is often present, trying in vain to comfort him. Patroclus then begs Achilles, Thapte me oti takista pulas aidao pereso. Bury me, so that I may pass quickly through the gates of Hades. Again, this request underlines the fact that Patroclus has no idea what has been going on above ground, as Achilles stated that evening to Agamemnon that the funeral would happen at dawn. So we see that Patroclus has been completely in the dark about Achilles' intentions. He has no idea of Achilles' vow not to bury Patroclus until he's killed Hector. So the question here is whether Achilles made this vow for Patroclus' sake or for his own. Granted, Achilles would have had no idea until now that Patroclus was stuck on the wrong side of the Styx. But all the same, it reinforces the uncompromising stubbornness which we have seen in Achilles throughout the Iliad, and the negative effect it has on his comrades. Once Patroclus has made his plea, we reach the emotional climax of the scene, where he implores Achilles, Kai moidos den ker, give me your hand, he says, for never again will they be able to sit apart from their comrades and talk. This gives us a rare look into Achilles and Patroclus' relationship, and it is all the more heartbreaking when Achilles attempts to embrace him but cannot. The fact that Patroclus thinks they will be able to embrace one final time further underlines how little he knows of his current situation. This scene and the funeral are pivotal to Achilles' emotional state. With Patroclus unburied, the idea of allowing Hector to be given a formal burial was unthinkable to him. But Patroclus' funeral acts as catharsis following the rage and grief he has maintained for the last 5 books. The emotional arc of book 23 thus peaks here at the beginning, and after Patroclus is buried, tensions cool off by way of the funeral games. The wrath which has consumed Achilles can now be left to lie, setting him in an appropriate frame of mind for his reconciliation with Priam in book 24 and the resolution of Hector's fate. I really enjoyed studying this passage in depth, and I found it especially powerful to think about what I took away from it on a purely emotional level. And I have to say, I was conflicted. On the one hand, I sympathize with Achilles, so overcome with grief and unable to embrace his dearest companion one last time. And then there's Patroclus, who, to his own mind, has been completely neglected by his best friend and is stuck by the Styx, being ignored by all the other spirits. But then all this is weighed upon by Hector. One of my classmates rightfully pointed out that while the dream scene is tragic, at least we know that Patroclus will be buried and have his peace. Hector, on the other hand, may be stuck on the banks of the Styx for the rest of time. And so who deserves our pity in this passage? I think it made for a great passage for being teacher of the day because there is so much room for discussion and interpretation. I did suffer from a bit of stage fright when I gave my class. I don't know if it can even be called stage fright when this was an audience of 8 people, but all the same, it's not very often that you're forced under the spotlight and told to teach to a group of people much more intelligent than yourself. In the feedback I got afterwards, the common response was that I did too much mumbling into my feet and not enough eye contact. So now that we are in podcast form, I'm trying to enunciate as best as I can. To anyone who may have a presentation coming up in the future, my advice would be to write your notes on flashcards. I thought my sheet of bullet points would be easy to follow, but I found that I often got lost in the sea of dots and lost my place. Have your flashcards in one hand and have the other hand free. Also, don't be deterred by the sea of unsmiling faces when you look up. It doesn't necessarily mean that they're bored. Don't be afraid to gesticulate or walk up and down. It will keep people engaged. I did not do either of these things, but in retrospect, I wish I had. And thanks to being teacher of the day, I will know too in the future. If you've come this far, then thank you very much for listening. We would love to hear from you, so if you have any questions, comments, or feedback, then don't hesitate to drop us a line below. My name is Claudia Cockrell, and this has been Musings from Greek 365. See you next week.